When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down, but when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/pod.
Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. This week we have a special guest, Patrick Marlowe, who joined us from the draft floor in Nashville. We have a draft overview for everyone and some news on upcoming free agents. All that and more this week on the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. So, Shang, let's get into just our overall impressions of this week. It's been a very big week. The Sharks selected 9 players at the
10 players. Is it? I'm pretty sure it's 10.
1, 2.
Want to count again? Am I wrong?
6, 7, 8, 9.
Oh, wow. I've been writing 10 for a while. Okay.
they had
a long day. Okay. I got to fix that then. Thank you for correcting me.
12 picks. Mm-hmm. They traded the 6th for Blackwood, traded one of the picks for moving up, and then traded another one for a buyout of the 7th.
Okay. But okay.
9 picks. So, Shang. Just your overall impression of the 2023 NHL entry draft and how it went?
Well, clearly it's been a very, very long week for me. As you can see in my background, I'm still in Nashville. I had a 7 a.m. flight today that was canceled when I was out on Broadway last night. And so I'm still here. I'm going to be leaving hopefully in about 30 minutes or so. So this portion of the podcast is going to be split in two just for anybody watching. So it'll be a little bit here at my friend's house and then a little bit in the car, and hopefully that works out. But hopefully you guys understand that, you know, on the go a lot, on the move right now too, trying to find out the Sharks, who they're qualifying. That deadline just passed about 40 minutes ago. So that might happen right as I'm talking to you. I might get a text with that list. So we'll see.
But the most breaking of breaking news.
Yep. Breaking of breaking news. So anyway, though, in terms of just my initial impressions of the draft, I want to say actually one thing right out front, that I might have been wrong about Matvei Michkov.
No, what do you mean by that?
How do I phrase this? Okay, so actually I have said before that that Michkov is the person that I would draft if I was the Sharks GM. But I also have dug deeply into character concerns with him. And I wrote an article to that effect a month ago. And I may have mentioned this in the last podcast, but I want to say it again, though, that I'm sensitive to the, I think, unfair brush that Russian players have received over the years. You know, guys like Sergei Fedorov, the enigmatic Russian, you know, guys like Sergei Fedorov and Alex Ovechkin that got painted with brushes like that. And they're both Stanley Cup winners. Evgeny Malkin, another multi Stanley Cup winner right there. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think it is an unfair brush. So before I wrote my story, before I put it out, I didn't just work off the first thing that I heard. I heard some stuff and then I started digging deeper into it. You know, as you can see in that story, there's multiple sources. Multiple sources that I thought did not have a sort of a dog in the fight sort of thing, you know, because of course there was a lot of thought of that teams were trying to badmouth Michkov so he would fall. So I will confirm that one of my sources was not Andrei Nikolishin, the Washington scout that pretty much came out and said some stuff, because, well, you know, that is sort of, yeah, if a Washington scout saying bad things about Michkov, hoping that Michkov drafts drops to them. You know, that is suspicious, you know. Yeah, and sure. I don't know Andre Nikolishin. I've never met him. So anyway, so I just want to make that clear that none of my sources in any of my stories are Andre. You know, I went through these multiple rounds of sources, people that have met or know Michkov's teammates in the KHL, mm-hmm. you know, people who have watched them live this year, you know, things like that, right? The one thing, though, that I learned this draft week, so the one thing that I wish I could have inserted into that story was just a little more balance in terms of you know, I wish I had found one voice, one NHL scout, or one a team like league source, like an agent or whatever, right? That would have pumped Michkov's tires. You know, just so that story had more balance, right?
I see. Yeah.
Because it doesn't negate the stuff that I heard previously, and doesn't make what the sources said wrong. I mean, Michkov mm-hmm. dropped to seventh. This guy true. Was the number two talent far. In the draft. It's not the number one, but at least the number two, right? Mm-hmm. So there are reasons why the teams passed.
Yeah,
but
for sure. And I mean, the contract being what it is, that's one of them. But there
that's one others. Of them. But you know, the mm-hmm. other stuff too, right? If it was just a contract, if it was just a junior player that took three years to come here, but he was Mr. Character, Mr. Team, captain of the team, and also too, he has Michkov's, you know, natural talent. That guy would have still been the second pick of the draft, and again, if not the first, over Bedard. Yeah. Anyway, though, so
how were you wrong?
that's the point of all this. So I finally found, and it may not be wrong in the end actually, but I finally found a very solid source over this past week, very very solid, that loves Michkov, that believes that Michkov the character things, and he knows. Okay, so I guess I'll say, without giving too much away, he is deeply, hold on, I gotta check to see if the RFA list, no, not out yet, deeply involved in maybe not so much him, but he's deeply involved with Russian area people. Let's just put it that way. So, you know, people that know Michkov, have seen him live and whatever, right? So this is not just like necessarily secondhand, or if it is, it's, you know, secondhand with somebody who like is directly, you know, watching Michkov, you know, on a nightly basis, on a regular basis live. So, loves Michkov, thinks character concerns are overblown, thinks that a lot was lost in translation, you know, just being a Russian and maybe even North American teammates and that sort of thing, right?
Yep,
and says that Michkov just wants to be the very best. And yeah, he may not be the nicest, warmest person in the world. He may never be the captain of his team. Sure. But, mm-hmm. you know, there are different, you know, there's being kind of a selfish, entitled, you know, a hockey player, which, you know, a lot of athletes, not just hockey players, but athletes are told from the age of whatever that they're the very best, right? And so naturally that can create that kind of arrogance or whatever, right? Of course, mm-hmm. right? So there's something like that, which is pretty normal. And then there's the criminality, which no one was, and I said that in the same story I wrote about Michkov's character concerns, that no one was saying anything like that. That okay. the things I heard about Michkov weren't great, and that he may not be the very best teammate right now, but that they weren't disqualifying though. They're things that people can grow into, mm-hmm. you know. And in the last podcast, and I'll repeat the story really fast because I think that I got further confirmation on this story. This past week, and it is very telling. It's a story I told last week about Dean Lombardi and mm-hmm. and you know 2008 draft, and I'll keep it quick because I told the story last week with Dean Lombardi interviewed Erik Karlsson, found Erik Karlsson to be was off put by him, found him to be arrogant. Yep, and so number 13 he picks Colton Tuber, who played 24 NHL games. Erik Karlsson, of course, went two picks later, 15th to the Ottawa Senators. Same draft, number 3, Drew Doughty, by the Kings. So the Kings could have come out with Doughty and Karlsson from the same draft. Like, literally, you know, the LA scouts wanted Karlsson. LA scouts didn't want Tubert. This was a Lombardi decision. And so the two things that take away from the story is, first, that a guy can, like Karlsson, can rebound from having that kind of reputation or rap, right? No one doubts, even though Karlsson can be, you know, aloof and arrogant and all those things, right? There is no question, though, that if you get Erik Karlsson to buy in, you can win with him. You know, just think 2017 Ottawa Senators, 2019 Sharks, the Western Conference team. So, you know, there's no question with whatever, you know, you want to say about Erik Karlsson, you can absolutely win with him. The second thing, though, is that how you present yourself and how you, you know, what people think of you and how you rub them the right way or wrong way, that absolutely can influence GMs too. And so I think we saw this with the draft. Obviously, the Flyers and Briere, you know, they had a couple interviews with Michkov, but you know, they heard enough that I liked. And I will say too, just in terms of fair, in terms of understanding, like a dogs in the fight, the person I talked to wasn't a Philadelphia person.
Okay.
You know, trying to pump the tires of their draft pick. So it wasn't Andre Nikolishin. It wasn't the Philadelphia. it wasn't someone from the Flyers. So I promise you that. But
okay. It wasn't head scout of Philly or whatever.
No, it wasn't. So I wish I could have put that into the story just to add some balance, though, because this guy, again, loves Michkov, and you know, I'm not gonna say loves the character, but doesn't think the character is an issue at all, though. We'll leave it at that.
I think one of the, like, a couple of things. So, well, I guess I want to go back to one thing. Would you have taken Michkov, or would you, or you still have that opinion of that would be your draft pick, I guess is the question.
Yeah. I mean, I also heard really bad stuff about Michkov from people I trust on this trip too. Stuff that I would have put into my article if I had heard it when I wrote the article a month ago. So extra stuff, right? But this week was really like bad stuff, but nothing disqualifying again, but bad stuff from people I trust, but also like really glowing stuff from people I trust, you know, and you know, about the, you know, character on the ice. Again, you know, guy just wants to be the best, you know. The example that was used for me, not the perfect example, Michael Jordan. So definitely not the best.
He wants to be the best. And there was, you know, but I think one of the things that struck out to me about the whole Michkov situation, the whole week that we were there, it's just how much the media like honed in on Michkov as the story. And it wasn't just like they went to the television cameras and said like, well, where's Michkov going to go? And drummed up that kind of attention. They were asking like Connor Bedard questions about Michkov. They were asking Will Smith questions about Michkov. They were asking Oliver Moore questions about Michkov.
In our press conference with Mike Greer, I noted in the story I wrote that there were more questions, or almost as many questions asked about Michkov to Mike Greer than Will Smith, or compared to Will Smith questions. I think there were like five Will Smith questions. There are three Michkov questions, a couple from me in Mike Greer's availability.
I mean, it's a huge story, but I feel a little bit bad about the kids that are getting drafted when their only question is like Reinbacher got drafted and he's going to be a great NHL player more than likely, but the hate that he got because of Michkov not being picked there, it just, Montreal, I feel bad
that's definitely tough.
It's something that I think maybe the media just kind of spiraled with it just a bit. And at some point, like, it was just interesting being in the draft floor and seeing like in the backstage Michkov like hugging, you know, like Leo Karlsson, and I was like, do they even know each other? I guess they probably talked or whatever. It just was interesting to me. I was like, oh, he's not just like this, you know, Russian secret. He's just he's a player, and he's trying to find his way in the NHL, hopefully eventually for the Flyers. So
hopefully eventually. But quickly about the rest of the picks before I need to get going into my Uber to the airport. Actually, I should also see. Hopefully, traffic's not too bad. Okay, no, I'm going to be in good shape. Okay, sorry.
How much time do you have before your flight?
My flight is at, let's see, it is 4:50 Central. Mm-hmm. It flights at 6:55 Central, but though I have a TSA pre-check, so that once I get to the airport, I'm fine. It's just a matter of, you know, traffic and so, and also just leaving this fucking city. So, yeah, hopefully the weather, because a lot of people are having trouble getting out. Yeah. A lot of people are having trouble coming in, as we saw Leo Carlson, and a lot of people are having trouble coming out. But quick thoughts about the rest of the draft.
Let's do
Nonetheless, okay, so Michkov, would have picked him over Smith, but still, Smith is a terrific pick. You know, everything about Smith, quality of player, upside. You know, maybe he's not going to have, like, quite Michkov upside, but he should be a top-of-the-line player. You know, if he's not a point-per-game player with sort of his skill set, right, then that's probably a little bit of a disappointment. Then that's a pick that didn't quite work out. But that ceiling is absolutely there, though. So
that they couldn't reach that ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, very, 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 see, you know, like very foreseeable. Also, too, let's see what else. Okay, so from what I understand, my best guess, and we don't know this for sure because I've heard other things too, but if Anaheim had gone Fantilli as expected, then I believe that Columbus would have gone Smith. Yeah. I think that Yarmo liked Smith a lot. Maybe not everybody on Columbus, because I know Columbus, one of their scouts, had Smith in Sweden. Carlson in Sweden in World Juniors. The recent World Championship. So, you know, so Columbus might have been a little divided. So maybe it wouldn't have been Carlson, or maybe they would have gone Carlson still. But I think there's a really good chance that it would have been Smith. So if it had been Fantilli Smith, then I think it would have been Carlson to the Sharks. So that's very, you know, a pretty good chance of that. You know, the pick of Musty, terrific pick. I just wrote a story today or yesterday, you know, what NHL scouts thought of the Sharks draft. And that's one of the scouts told me, that teams were looking to trade up for Musty. So I think that's a terrific pick there. Good value pick. Obviously the Cagnoni pick, great value there. That's a second round, maybe talent value, right? That they got in the late fourth round there. Some of these other guys, I don't know quite as well. Obviously, the one that you know, the guy they traded up, Brandon Svoboda, that they traded up a couple of picks, 71. You know, that we'll have to find out more about him. That's somebody that the Sharks definitely liked, knew more about than some other teams. I will say, I think I saw a Svoboda celebrating. I'm not sure. Someone in the Sharks jersey that looked very much like Brandon Svoboda celebrating out on Broadway with his family, okay, responsibly, cool. I'm sure. Last night, well deserved. So, in general, though, you know, I think the big question with the Sharks, of course, in this draft, why didn't they get a goalie? But I think that, you know, Chris Morehouse explained it yesterday, just that it just didn't quite fall. And there wasn't that guy that they liked enough to pick, you know, apparently 36, you know, because, you know, 35 was actually the first goal he won, surprisingly, was Adam Gajan. Is that how you say
Gajan,
his name?
Gajan.
Gajan. I wonder if that's who the Sharks had identified as their number one guy. I do know that Gajan was a guy that they definitely talked with multiple times, I would say, before the draft. I know they also talked to Rabel multiple times too, but obviously they didn't like Rabel enough for 36, right? So So I wonder about Gajan, if maybe he was their number one. But besides that, I think those are my general impressions. You know, I would give the draft a B. One scout I talked to gave it B minus. Another scout actually liked it enough, B plus, in the A area, A minus area. I think it would have been an A, obviously, with probably with Michkov. But I think the Sharks did well overall here.
We have some breaking news, Shang. The San Jose Sharks have issued qualifying offers to Martin Kaut and Fabian Zetterlund, and have not issued qualifying offers to Blackwood, Gajewicz, Gregor, Mann, and Svechnikov. So, your thoughts, if you can give them while you're in the car.
Right off the top, I believe that the Sharks and Blackwood are working on a new deal. It doesn't mean that
the deal will happen. So Blackwood could still be a free agent tomorrow, but they are working on one though. So at least that's my belief. So or understanding. So so I would expect Blackwood to still be with the Sharks. I will say I was surprised. I'm surprised with Gregor and Gadjevich. With Gregor, I know that he has not been the consistent player that people had hoped for and expected, and he has not produced at a level that, you know, his speed and just the number of actually sheer number of chances that he that he's able to get, you know, he should have more goals, obvious, right? And you know, he's not such a what again?
It feels like he should. I mean, he's always around the net. He's always at least getting his shots. It just doesn't go in.
Yeah, and you know, and he's, you know, one of the worst, one of the worst things he can be. I don't know, and I don't know, maybe not, but like he's an offensive player that is not productive offensively. You know, you're not going to really use him defensively. He didn't pick up enough, you know, defensive kind of game that, you know, he right now at least, or at least as a Shark, that he could be sort of a stopper kind of, you know, defensive stopper kind of guy, which a guy with his speed. And his physicality, actually, you know, that's possible for him one day, but it's not right now. But nonetheless, surprised though, because the Sharks lack talent everywhere, and they lack guys with even like they lack players with even a degree of upside. And no, Gregor doesn't have a lot of upside, but he does have a degree of upside. And so if he kind of puts things together a little bit next year, and I could see him being, you know, someone that other teams are, you know, interested in at a minimum, because he's shown promise over the last couple of years. He's fast, right? You put him with somebody, you know, something good, you know. I think he's a guy that should get a contract somewhere. It's kind of like a Rudy Balzers after the Sharks bought Balzers out. Maybe Balzers isn't a $1.5 million player, like his contract, and is not a everyday NHL player, but you know, he's a player that is, you know, young enough, upside enough that he's going to get a good look. And so I think Gregor will get that. Gadjevich surprises me mainly because the Sharks are believed that they're going to let a Jeffrey VL walk. VL is going to be a UFA actually. But so you're losing two guys that of the same role. You know, once it was kind of put out there that VL wasn't coming back, you know, you sort of figured that, okay, well then maybe that's, you know, they were kind of occupying the same role as the heavy, and now it's Gadjevich's job, and Gadjevich is younger. I think Gadjevich's game actually did grow last year. Maybe not enough so that, like, you know, he's a no-brainer to qualify, but it grew enough, and he's young enough, and, you know, enough pedigree, second-round draft pick by Vancouver. And I've been told that the Canucks really didn't want to waive him. They knew that a team would pick him up. And I'm a little surprised by that, because, again, he's a guy that has a degree of upside. You know, not a ton, but some upside, and he's pretty young. And he's, you know, good locker room presence, and all those kind of things too. Works hard, so he's gonna be an asset for some team, I think too. Just like Gregor. The other ones that they didn't qualify, Strauss, man, doesn't surprise me. That's been my belief the entire summer. Yeah, I've written that or said that. Sveshnikov doesn't surprise me. You know, they did give him some run. You know, they gave him a lot of games. And I do know that he was playing a little bit hurt at the end of last season, because I think he knew that he needed to he needed to be out there if you want a better contract. Didn't pack it in, and even Sharks, you know, had a bad record and weren't going anywhere. And so he kept playing. And unfortunately for him, you know, it didn't work out with the Sharks. But good luck to him, a good guy, and like I said, yeah, played hurt at the end of last season. Anyone else I'm missing? I know Blackwood we talked about.
Well, not missing, but we did get qualifications and a contract for E2 McEniemy and for Jacob Peterson, which we kind of both expected given their upsides and how young they are and everything. So they've already been done with. I think this could also just be the continuation of Mike Greer's like purging of the prior regime's prospect picks, everybody that they picked up, right? So Gadjevich, Svechnikov. I think actually Svechnikov was Mike Greer, but
yeah, Svechnikov is Mike Greer.
But Noah Gregor and everything, it could just be the continuation of that effect where even if they are decent or maybe qualifiable, it's they just want to give a new crop of people a chance, new free agents, a build up from the Barracuda, that kind of thing. That we could be seeing. And there's also just been a ton of free agents that or RFAs that weren't qualified that are just better than Gregor and Gadjevich and Svechnikov. So it's not just the Sharks.
Yeah.
You know.
Sure.
For sure. We've got
sure, and the Sharks will have a lot of opportunity to offer guys like that. Like I don't know, we saw Daniel Sprong, right, become available. Yep. So guy exactly. like that, you know, like come to San Jose and you have a very good chance to be a top six winger. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's just like, there's so many that are out there that are Morgan Geeky, Daniel Sprong, they got like Cal Foots, they got Tyson Jost, Sam Steele, McLeod,
Comtois.
Yep. There's just a ton of probably all of them being better in some way than Gregor and Svechnikov and Gadjevich.
Right. More track record, right? Like Comtois has hit 15 goals before. Sprong, you know, has scored double digits, right? So yeah, no, absolutely. No, that's a fair point too. Yeah, when we talk about like guys like Gregor and Gadjevich that offered some qualities, but yeah, it sounds like it could be a bit of a buyer's market at the low end of the free agency pool.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're losing Shang just a bit. Maybe he's going to come back here. If not, then we can wait for him to resume when we get back to the part of the podcast. But we'll see here. Shang. Hello.
Am I back?
You're back. Oh, my gosh. You're back. Yep.
Okay.
We lost you for like a half a minute. This is
that was just an internet dead spot. Nothing worse than that. So good. It's gonna be very dramatic when we put this out, though. It's gonna be all blackness for 30 seconds there. But anyway, I just was saying that Kaut was the one that I thought maybe they wouldn't, but I guess they saw enough out of him in his time with the Sharks. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure if I quite see it, but you know, he's a player of, you know, some talent, you know, good size, obviously doesn't skate too badly for guys size, and, you know, down low and tight, he does have some quality to his game. And so maybe he can blossom.
Yeah. I think there's enough there. And also I think now with Ryan Merkley not getting qualified, I think we can officially say that they won the Ryan Merkley trade, not that they won the draft pick, but they won the trade for now, at least. But I think there's enough there.
They can re-sign. They can re-sign Ryan.
Yeah, they can go get Merkley again if they want. but I think there's enough there with Martin Kaut to also he has some value as a tweener pick because he was pretty good on the Barracuda in a position that the Barracuda doesn't have a lot of depth, like on the wing, basically on the right wing.
Right.
So I think even if not, he's got enough of a runway and. Is well liked enough by Mike Greer to stick around. So, Zetterlund, I think everybody has mentioned that Zetterlund did not look great after the Meyer trade. So, and he had very, very low point totals and just wasn't doing a whole lot up in like the top six role for the Sharks. So it's not that anybody's surprised that he got qualified. It's just that, you know, it shows that they still have some faith in him for next season.
Yeah, I mean, they're banking on the previous scouting reports about, you know, why they acquired him, right? And, you know, all the scouting reports before on Zetterlund were pretty glowing. Not like he was going to be like a first-line guy, but that he's going to be a really solid third-line forward for years to come. And so hopefully he fulfills that.
Yep, absolutely. I wanted to touch on just some of my takes on the draft while we've got you here so you don't have to talk as much.
Oh, sure.
but I agree with most of what you were saying. No. It's difficult being in the car, and I just got back myself from the draft, so I was in a car all day, and then I'm now in my beautiful home. I'm also ready for bed. But anyway, the draft was an amazing time. I think me, you, and JD provided a lot of good coverage, hopefully, for everybody. And can't wait to do it again the next year. But a couple of things. I think the Sharks knew that the pick that they needed to make was Will Smith. They know that in the future with Hurdle and Couture getting older and this team kind of trying to turn over a new leaf in ways, they're going to need to build down the middle. And I think you had asked them a question about whether or not they think that Will Smith is going to stick at center, given his like kind of his profile of more of a less defensive player. Does he have enough of size and a defensive acumen to play center? Which it sounds like they think he does. It's just something that needs to develop, of course. But I think they made the pick that they needed to make at four. There was also some just talk on the draft floor that Michkov didn't pick where he wanted to go, but he might have instead, in a way, where he was maybe not meeting with teams or maybe not giving them the full answers that they wanted. To kind of fall to where he wanted, maybe. This is all rumors and speculation. Maybe it'll come out eventually, but that's kind of something that I think when people think about, oh, we didn't pick Michkov, might not have been available to be picked in a realistic sense.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We still, Mike was very evasive when I asked him twice, back-to-back days, whether or not the Sharks actually met with Michkov, which I found curious because, of course, the Athletic, Corey Mastisak, great work, of course. Sorry to see him go, but his last one of his last articles for Athletic was from the draft combine. And he mentioned in that article that someone from the Sharks told him that they wanted to talk with Michkov in Nashville. And so that's already out there. So I'm not sure why Mike was evasive about it. You know, and I understand maybe a little before the draft, you're tipping your hand a little bit. Just a little bit, not a lot, but just a little bit. But after the draft, though, what's the difference? You know, he's already been drafted. He's not, you know. And I think I think even for Mike and the Sharks, I think the fans would like to know that Mike did his due diligence and spoke with or tried to, and he was refused or something like that. Spoke with Michkov, and okay, maybe he spoke with him and didn't like him enough. Not that he didn't like him, but didn't like him enough, and he still likes Smith so much. That's fine, you know. But I think the fans would like to know that, which is why I asked twice. I'm going to assume that they did meet with them because the general report was that he did meet with all the, you know, most of the top 10 teams. But again, though, we don't know. We don't have an actual confirmation that San Jose was one of them, though. You know, we know Philadelphia, obviously, that drafted him. And I think a couple others were, you know, put out there. They did actually meet Michkov in Nashville. So anyway.
Yeah. So anyways, I think the Will Smith pick for me, I also, you know, I'm going to be kind of sad that they didn't get Michkov, but we'll see in 5 years. And I think Will Smith was a great pick at the choice. And we have a high end prospect for sure. The Musty pick was Musty and actually Halton. And for me, were not like need based, but they did address a need in the system for the Sharks, which is basically some size on the wings, right? So we have so many under 6 foot wingers that have been drafted in the past like 3 years or acquired or in any way that are in the Shark system right now that it feels like they're missing size down the left wing and right wing. So, you know, Musty 6'2", 6'3", somewhere around there, big player. Can be physical, isn't always, but can be. And then Halton, and obviously very tall, 6'3", something like that. Still developing his game past just get pucks to the net, kind of be a shooter kind of guy, but definitely with size. And I think that was something that the Sharks
got to get in shape too, apparently.
Yeah, I saw that. There was a report about Haltonen's conditioning, which is interesting. His hockey sense and conditioning might need a little bit of work.
A scout told me that.
But then their next pick, Svoboda.
That's okay for 36, though. Yeah.
There's still work to be done there. He definitely has a monster of a shot, like a fantastic shot. And then their next pick at 71, it sounds like they picked more of the athletic type, right? So, like, Svoboda got, like, high numbers on a lot of different combine events. And it's been well thought of in terms of his athleticism. So they went with size again, but just somebody who's a little bit closer on the athletic scale, but a little bit lesser on the skills scale. So it'll be interesting to see where 36 and 71 kind of develop, basically, because they also traded 94 and 100 to get 71. So that was one of the three picks that they lost. So there will be some comparison.
Oh, can I ask you? I didn't look this up, but the draft value, is that about right? The draft value charts?
About right.
94 and 100 for 71.
Yeah, once you get...
Curious. Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty close. I think it's slightly more for the 94 and 100, but once you get past like pick 60 or so, the value is just like just straight down. So I think it's slightly more for 94 and 100.
Decimals, okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. Very close.
Okay.
So, you know, I think it was a fine pick for the guy that they – it's just people will always argue that was Svoboda going to be there at 94? Who knows? 93 was Yuri Felkman, which if you don't
know, Chris Morehouse said that he did not. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't think so.
Chris Morehouse said that he did not think. Yeah.
My main point is 93 was Yuri Felkman. So the pick right before there. And Yuri Felkman is a very, very unknown Czech prospect that was drafted because he's 6'4", athletic, skates decently enough. So it's like at a certain range in the draft, you're just picking like a project or like a guy that you maybe see could develop into something, but it's not like they're off the board picks from 70 to 90 that happen all the time. So just wanted to put that out there. Beyond Svoboda, obviously the Cagnoni pick was a huge thing for the draft, for us to be there. Graded anywhere from the 30s to the 60s by most mocks or most draft guides. And he fell all the way to 123. Which is a fantastic value in terms of a pure numbers perspective. We met with Cagnoni at the draft and talked with his family a little bit, and he seems like a great kid. So really excited to see where he goes next. They picked a couple more players in the end of the draft that have qualities of NHL players. Axel Landon is a physical defenseman out of Sweden. Good size, okay skater. They felt had some qualities that could make the NHL one day. And that's a certain point also what you're looking for in the draft is your project picks, right? They had some connections to the USHL this year, which I think was touched on as well. David Klee, Eric Polkamp, Brandon Svoboda, all out of the USHL, the US development pathway, not the program itself, essentially. But just an interesting shift. I think that might be the most USHL players we've drafted in many years, probably since 2017, I think, something like that. At least a couple of years. I didn't actually look, but wanted to get your thoughts on that too, if you had anything else to say about the last few picks. Or we lost you.
Okay. No, not really. Last few picks are sort of like, I mean, they all have they all have some some skill that's not maybe high end but like higher than most, sure. Right, but of course it's about the rest of the musties package. I know people like that headline. So it's about the rest rest of the package coming together, and so we'll see. I did like the scouting reports though that I did get on the last draft pick, Simashevsky, I think his name is, the Belarusian.
Your Rimashevsky.
Just kind of pure offense. I think Elite Prospects. Yeah, I think Elite Prospects wrote that, like, if there's any person that cheats on offense, it's Shipolesky. So
yeah.
So that's fun. I like that. So yeah. So hopefully, you can put up some points somewhere, if not for the NHL.
There was definitely some aspect of Russian players that were drafted a little bit later and some that were drafted a little bit higher, right? So we had Boot and Simashev and Michkov all going in the top, 12, which probably is about right, given that they're all unique and actual high upside picks. And then you had players like Timur Mukhanov going 160s, and he's rated in the 50s to 100s. And then Rimashevsky was rated anywhere in the hundreds or so, and he went all the way to 203. So,
what I do have to say about that is that it's actually nice that it seemed like, even though teams had to take certain lengths to scout the Russians, this is a story that we got from Craig Morgan, Arizona, everything Arizona Coyotes, he knows everything about them. And, he put it in his story too, that, the Coyotes snuck scouts into Belarus to see Shemeshev and Boot. But anyway, yeah, what was nice about this draft is that as big a story as Michkov and the Russians were, that they all pretty much, the Russians, you know, they weren't like pushed out, dropped out of the first round. A lot of people had Boot maybe in the 20s. He obviously went higher. Shemeshev obviously went way higher than expected. And so basically, yep. Russians were kind of treated like normal in this draft. I mean, not exactly, obviously, with Michkov and all the headlines around him. But yeah, but just in general, though, you know, there was the, you know, like you mentioned, there were the guys that went higher than they should have or higher than expected, not should have, higher than expected. There's guys that went about where they should have. And there's the guys that dropped more than, you know, maybe projected. Yeah. And that's just like any normal draft.
100%. That's just like your normal Canadian or American or Finnish or Swedish prospect. Mm-hmm. They're going to go in a big range. And it's not like there was any kind of run on Russians or any kind of like, we're not going to draft you, you know, kind of thing. I think there was just a spread basically of where players were going to go. So I think my favorite pick is going to be the Cagnoni. Yep. Kate, I'm going to say it wrong 20 times. And then Liz Child is going to yell at me. I think it's Cagnoni. Pick at 123. I think that's gonna be my favorite of the draft. I think that's a very high upside pick that they made. I think our last segment, if we've got a little bit of time before you make it to your final destination here, Shane, actually it's, you'll be your partial destination.
Yeah, almost at the airport. Yeah,
we'll be the free agent.
Hopefully the plane leaves
market. So we've got about 36 hours before free agency opens. And I want to get your thoughts on what you think the Sharks might target for free agency. If you've got any names or positions, or what do you think?
Yeah, I haven't dug as deeply as I want to, just because of just the timing of this, right? Like this is unusual. This is a little unusual that a draft is so tight with the free agency, literally like a day in between. At least the last couple of years, obviously with COVID and stuff. And anyway, it's been a little different. So I haven't been able to kind of dig into the free agency class as much. I know it's not as strong too, so that's probably another reason why I didn't dig that hard into. Also, the Sharks aren't going to be involved. Mike Rizzo said it, and there's no reason not to believe him. The Sharks are not going to be involved in the high end of the free agency pool too. So another reason for me not to look too hard into it. But I think though, in general though, that the Sharks need to identify higher upside guys that are, you know, are a little devalued right now. You know, guys that they can pick up on the cheap and potentially flip at the deadline, or guys that they can pick up on the cheap and might grow into, core, not like cornerstone, not franchise players, but like core, solid core pieces of a competitive team. I think that's sort of what I concentrated on. A couple of names that just jumped out to me. Eric Gustafson, everybody's favorite. Okay. Minimum player that you can drop on the blue line and will score you 40, 50 points if you give him the enough power play time and whatnot. I think
that's an interesting one, especially if Carlson is on the move and everything.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's tied into Carlson actually leaving, but like you still need a decent player to lead your power play to help out Hurdle, Couture, and your younger players too. You don't want William Eklund, no disrespect to Matt Benning, who did the best he could, but you don't want William Eklund on your first power play unit with Matt Benning as your quarterback. That's just not conducive for it. It's not fair to Matt, because that's not a role that he should be playing at the NHL level. And it's not fair to William, because you need somebody that, you know, is better suited for the power play. And so a guy like Gustafson is perfect like that, because he obviously has flaws in his game, but he also has obvious strengths that can help fill a little bit of the void if Erik Karlsson leaves. other names that kind of jumped out besides, obviously there's some of the names that weren't qualified too, and you rattled off all those names, and all those names, yeah, for one reason or another, you know, could have could help the Sharks, younger and more productive than some of the guys that they've let go, like and Sprong. And Sharks definitely need wingers, right? Like at center, they're actually between Hurdle, Couture, Sturm, and Lawrence. Like, I mean, that's not one of the best center cores in the league, but that's not one of the worst though. Well, maybe it's one of the worst. It's not the worst. You can argue it's average or something like that. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's competitive. That's the euphemism I should have said from the beginning. It is a competitive center group. You know, if those four centers were flanked by really good wings, the Sharks can win games that way. But they definitely have a lot of gaps on wing. Right now, Alexander Barabanov is the Sharks' best winger. William Eklund is probably their second best winger, and so that shouldn't be the case. So, you need a lot of players around that. That means that below them, you know, it gets even a little more dire. I'm trying to think of. I actually was looking up a bunch of names and reaching out to a bunch of people. Let me see, like a guy like, you know, I'm going to throw out an older player, not a younger one like Sprong, but like a guy like Danton Heinen, right? Like he scored before an NHL level. With more minutes, you know, can he, you know, put him some points and then maybe be flipped at the deadline to somebody? I think that's kind of guy that's, you know, there's a little bit of upside with a guy like that, and he's not going to be very, very expensive. So, you know, those are the kind of model players. More veteran types like Heinen and Gustafsson that can, you know, fill a role, a more elevated role in a competitive fashion and possibly be flipped at the deadline. Or, yeah, like I said, younger guys like Sprong and whatnot.
Yeah, I think a lot of the same. I think they're going to go after an offensive defenseman of some description. There's players that have been kind of trending downwards in their career that were at one point offensive defensemen. OEL was bought out. Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Shattenkirk is a free agent.
Shattenkirk's available. Matt Dumba is available. Players that, you know, they're kind of trending down, but they are at one point able to put up some points, especially on a power play. So I think Klingberg. If Carlson does, Klingberg is a good one. I think one of them will likely be coming to the Sharks just because of the way that the prospect pipeline is. There's not a lot of offensive defensemen that are ready to make the jump just yet.
Right.
And with Carlson leaving.
Oh, I thought of another name that I was looking into. Another veteran type that, you know, had slowed down last season. You know, if he bounces back, can you flip him at the deadline and you get something and he gets to go somewhere, you know, a better team, right? A guy like James Van Riemsdyk.
Sure.
A little older. You know, a little bit older, but times, right? The Sharks project to have plenty of opportunity on the power play and in their top nine for wingers. Yeah. So a guy like that could fit in well too.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a hopefully pretty creative solution to some of the Sharks' problems, and, you know, whether or not that leads to a significant increase in the point total for next year, it's unlikely, but it could be players that are trying to recreate their career or get, you know, flipped to the deadline for some more assets, which is, I think, what we'll all be kind of interested in. So I think our final segment of the night is going to be a interview with Patrick Marleau. This was done on the draft floor right before day two.
This is the final segment. I'm 5 minutes away from the airport. So,
yeah, this is all we've got. And I think everybody, this is kind of our abridged podcast. I think in general, we're going to be somewhere in the hour 20 minute range, but this one will probably be like 45 minutes just because we're all.
Yeah. The interview with Patrick is not very, very long.
Yeah,
but it's still it's still the first time that he's spoken about the development of being rejoining the Sharks in a front office capacity. I know that he was on, I think, an NHL Network too during the draft, but we actually talked with Patrick before that, so we just didn't put it out before.
More personal interview with Patrick. So I hope you all enjoyed that. Next week we'll be. Basically having our dev camp.
Okay, Keegan's going out now.
There's going to be lots of news. I think it's okay for us to play it now, and then we'll see you all next week. So thank you so much, Shang.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to my Lyft driver, Edward, for his patience. I just cut out there.
Okay, we got the shout out
on this pass for the last 40 minutes or so. So yeah, if you're ever in Nashville, and your man for a ride.
All right. Sounds good, Shang. Let's play the interview and hope you guys have a good day.
Announcing the first pick there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was pretty exciting. Pretty cool to be able to do that.
Yeah. What did you know about Will before, or like did you hang out with him yesterday at all?
Just watched some video, kind of came in. It's all new to me, so I'm just trying to pick up what I can when I can. So I was able to watch a little bit of video.
Wasn't it just before. Kind of perfect though? Obviously, 1997, you're the second overall pick, and then now you're back here. 26 years later, announcing the Sharks number 4.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I was just kind of goes by like that.
Right.
It was great to be able to be part of it and be part of the their special day.
Also nice too that Will is not exactly in your style of player, but he's an offensive guy. A guy after your own heart kind of.
Yeah. No. These guys coming in, they're so highly touted with all their skill level coming in. So it's great to have those players and be able to. But looking forward to working with those players and help them out.
Any thoughts on Quentin?
Just excited to get to work with these guys. I think we got Jeff Camp coming up and being on the ice with these guys and trying to help them any way possible. So I'm looking forward to getting to meet them and know them and see what makes them tick. So I can try and help them.
Yeah. And what I'd like to kind of get into a little bit is sort of coming out, you took a year off in Florida. Why exactly this path with development, instead of other, I'm sure, roads that are open to you with the Sharks?
We just kind of felt that probably the best fit or the best spot to kind of start out at. As where we got a little bit of experience doing that when I was playing. So looking forward to be able to just kind of help us on that as well to some of these guys out.
And how did the experience last year at Death Camp? You came by for a couple of days there. How did that experience sort of tell you, like, hey, this would be a good fit for me?
Yeah, no, it was fun to get out there and kind of go through that death camp from not the player side but the coach side. Same thing, like getting to work, getting to know what we're trying to do with these kids, how we're trying to bring them along. And certain kids need to work on certain things, so it's still a big learning curve, but excited to learn it.
And you're also advisor, so you'll be picking up other things too. So are you just sort of trying to soak up everything and then just figure out your next step, kind of?
Giving me the benefit of being able to kind of look in on different departments if I want to, and kind of just learn the game as much as possible.
Patrick, when did you know that you were going to get into the more management side, the more like development side of things?
Probably just right before we were just talking with Mike and everybody else at the Sharks. Kind of just trying to see what would work best, and just be around and just learn a little bit at a time, or
right,
a lot at a time, whatever it is, just be around and help out as much as possible.
Well, do you see some of your peers like Steve Yzerman, Joe Sakic? Can you see President Patrick Marleau, GM Patrick Marleau one day?
I don't know about that. We'll just stick to just learning what position they got right now. So it's extremely exciting to be around all like the staff and everybody that's been doing it for a long time. So I'm soaking it all in.
And from what I understand, you'll be focused on Barracuda and younger Sharks players, and you'll be mostly based in San Jose. That is sort of Mike Ricci has been doing that too a lot this past year. So will you be kind of working in tandem with Mike?
I believe so. Yeah, this is we're gonna kind of play it by ear. But I'm looking forward to get back, and obviously we're gonna have all those discussions of what we're gonna do together. But we'll be working together. Looking forward to it.
So you'll bring a little more of the soft touch to the prospects, and you know Mike, we know what Mike brings, right? Well, are you your family, everybody moved back to San Jose then? Yeah. Oh, okay, that's awesome. Okay, and your sons. I know you moved to Florida in part because of your son's career. You know, how's that coming along?
Good. Yeah, he'll be away from the house for next year playing hockey. That's going to be a lot different for our family. So it's going to be sad to see him go, but he's at that age where he's ready to move on and continue to follow his dream.
Where do you think he'll go?
Probably somewhere in Canada, I would assume.
Yeah. All right, awesome. And family all happy to be back?
Yeah, it'll be obviously away from there. We've got a lot of family close there.
Did you keep the same house? Last question for you. How hard are you working to get Joe Thornton to come, to the side? You're like, hey, come over to the side.
Joe's a big boy. I mean, we'll talk to him. He's around a lot already from what I heard. So it'll be on his time.
All right. Well, Patrick, congratulations. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. So start your free trial of SiriusXM today. Visit SiriusXM.com/believe.